After all this, you still...
I still want that gas, yes. And you had better deliver.
Welcome back to The Greenhouse, dear listener. It's just me, Adi, today with another solo episode. I hope this one turns out better than the last one did. I made sure I drank some water ahead of time for this one, but hey, it's what it is. It's another prepared speech I'm reading off here again, and let's see how much I'm able to get out, because I plan to talk about a very vague and overarching feeling, but I can't guarantee I'll describe that precisely or even make any coherent insight out of it. But I'm speaking to this new sense of unease for me and maybe some other fellow observers in the present, of an almost pervasive yet taboo sense that there is no future. This may make sense for those of us who view the Kush vlog, or you may have come to a similar realization of your own accord. It's anecdotal, but enough friends and people in my parasocial spheres have reached some variant of this conclusion, that there seems to be a lack of a future, be it for us as a generation, a nation, or a species. With the aesthetics of apocalypse common in our media, or as a backdrop for conspiracy theory and survival preppers, it seems like an uncomfortable joke in the mainstream. You don't give it due diligence or attention, but you look at it a little more than you like, and it keeps you unsettled, just a little bit. I insist, however, it may be time to possibly accept that the apocalyptic moment had passed us a while back, and that we're actually living in it right now. It's not something to anticipate and fear. It's the actual moment. I don't mean to alarm you with that, not at all. This isn't a scare fest I want to engage in. However, it is indeed a radical shift in perspective that I encourage you to take, because the moment requires it. I can't guarantee that just adopting a new framework is enough to pull us all out of this mess. It absolutely can't be. But as of late, I've been coming to the realization that in spite of how behind one can feel or be, there's no time like the present to catch up. I do worry that for this one, I'm going to come off as a bit of a self-absorbed editorial writer, so please bear with me. I promise you in earnest, this is just me going off. I'm no expert. I wouldn't even go as far as to say I'm the only person describing this phenomenon. And I'll try to point you in the direction of some people who might be useful to listen to here. Matt Crispin. Heck, if you got someone who's speaking to this moment, recommend them to me. Send that my way. I think the uniquely American obsession with apocalyptic concepts in media as an abstract fear or as the basis for the medium itself, right? It might have to do with just how much we're given and how much we're promised. Very little acknowledgement seems to happen in the mainstream when it comes to trying to understand the nature of consumption that we use to obtain the goods and services that we take for granted. And these can be hidden behind dry and dull concepts of the supply chain, to what we can see as the brutal extractive labor performed by people, and that's done to the environment in the quote-unquote third world. And we even see it discussed frequently by a widespread and well-paid network of academics, media figures, pundits, politicians, and interest groups who really obscure the fact that this degree of exploitation happens. And even if the sense of how big it is gets out, they'll be there to say that, hey, this image is good, don't worry about it. Now, when they can't do that, they can at least try to get people not to care so much. Doing that can dull the pain into discomfort, the discomfort into a nagging feeling, the nagging feeling into a cold behavior we can exercise to prevent ourselves from having to come to terms with the contradictions of our daily reality. With this kind of framework, we do live in an extended, alienated relationship from the mundane nature of how we get things to the difficult question of how we can go through the world, just accepting or ignoring this immense level of pain as somehow baked into the whole process. So what would happen if this apparatus collapsed? That's the inherent resting fear, especially in pop culture from the zenith of America's golden years, whether the threat is zombies, aliens, Soviets, or zombie alien Soviets, the citizen beholden to that worldview is always subconsciously aware that something dark happens to ensure the sausage is made. And as long as they can derive the benefit, what good is there to ask questions of any sort? And for a while, that did work. Is it still working? That really does depend on who you ask. And if you've been paying attention to this program, you'd know by now that for a lot of people, they'd be of the mind that it hasn't been working. Now, how and why it hasn't been working, of course, that's the question everyone disagrees with. But I'm not necessarily here to dispute those questions. If you have to know, I'm of the mind that once America took the deep neoliberal turn, and then the layup from Nixon onwards was probably the point where pleasure started to get sent up and pain started to get sent downwards. It's been happening for a while, but I think that intensified it into what we recognize today. For whatever reason, I see that the most accepted Beltway commentary seems to allege that things are better and in fact are on their way to the top, and that, say for instance, the pandemic's damage is nearly over. Then there are the loud voices they look on with disdain that say the end is coming. But if you push those loud voices, they'd also agree that the crisis point has not yet been reached. Now, I've jokingly referred to the process that is the title of this show called Greenhouse Gaslighting, where, much akin to someone being told their recollection of events is wrong inside a hot glass room, we make similar presumptions about the world we live in and how it works. Keep in mind, this may be a useful framework to analyze the most engaged and online Democratic and Republican partisans, bound by a strange and honestly somewhat lame loyalty to certain media figures aligned with each respective party, or the politicos that are celebrities to them. And they know how to really work those pre-written stances on the culture war arenas. Trump's base, and by token, Biden's base, may be good groups to apply this lens to. And my critique of the Biden base as of late has been that in spite of making a grand plea for the renunciation of Trump and using the unfortunate events of January 6th as an indictment to justify the need to put themselves in charge, did indeed present the threat of Trump's re-election or election fuckery as a cataclysmic risk. Sorry, cataclysmic risk. The thing is, I would assume, like you, that in response to getting out of that situation pretty narrowly, that they'd work to avoid a repeat and ensure a drastic plan was enacted to prevent that level of risk from being encountered again. Maybe they can't act that drastically. Maybe they don't learn from experience. But I can say for sure that they thought their crisis was averted, and cataclysm is now fully in the rearview mirror. With the present secure, they can focus on the future now, right? Well, needless to say, I don't think I've seen so much will applied and ink spilled to maintain the status quo before. The Beltway has never seemed less interested. It's almost as though they've sunken back to their default of assuming things are going to be okay. And hey, maybe that is okay for them. But this isn't a luxury afforded to the folks I'm hearing from and talking to. I can't speak to all walks of life, but in my own selfish, self-relating way, I'll try to explain. For many of us under 30 especially, the promise of a job after painstakingly obtaining a degree no longer exists, and the hope of being able to start a life, have your own home, or even pay off those goddang student loans in a sensible way is near impossible. I do understand that bringing up this topic is passé, but just hear me out. Isn't there something banal about this, and also somewhat depressing? these traditional markers of adulthood are less and less attainable for more and more people every day. But in and out, you'll hear things like, well, did you try to apply for a scholarship? Have you tried moving around for a job? And other bits of so-called advice that really don't consider the realities for folks on the ground. Combine this phenomenon with some other cold truths around us. We've been dealing with a pandemic for nearly a year and a half, and even as vaccines have been administered to some degree, there's no real reckoning that's been had with the sheer amount of death and harm done by this pandemic. Pandemic protections, masks, and vaccines have been reduced to culture war signifiers, and the most comfortable of us are heading out to brunch and wilding out as service workers still bear the brunt, being told that no one wants to work by employers. With new strains on the rise, initial bouts of refusal to share the vaccine with other nations, and the increasing sense that there is some permanent level of isolation that's been caused by this pandemic, it does indeed feel like we live in the wake of some disaster whose effects still persist. Now, let's bring it back to the greenhouse effect, the actual greenhouse effect. The biggest and most pervading mood against the shifting rise in awareness of climate change is the notion that this is some sort of alarmism. But again, the way I try to explain this to people who can't get it is that human activities have created entropy in the system. With the reality of climate change and the degree of carbon in air at this point, so-called 100-year storm events are going to become a regularity of life. And even if you've been in the same boat as the rest of the country, where you can't recall any event past last week, let's just try to take a very recent look at the past. In February, Texas was hit with an ice storm that left communities severely ill-equipped for the weather and sub-freezing conditions, leading to at least 57 deaths. To make matters worse, the highly deregulated, free market logic electric grid of Texas was sorely unequipped for this crisis and may in fact have exacerbated it by virtue of its setup. Whether or not this event is going to serve as the turning point for action is yet to be seen. But these events aren't exactly stopping. The Pacific Northwest has been hit with an intense heat wave that the people and infrastructure are also not at all equipped for, with cities like Seattle hitting all-time heat records, power cables just having holes burst open in them because of the heat, roads are quite literally expanding and cracking. To top it off, drought has entered the equation for the region. And it's happening closer and closer to home. Just a few days ago, we had intense downpour in southeast Michigan, with neighborhoods and roads flooding in Detroit, despite warnings from climate scientists and previously expressed concerns from residents who had already dealt with floods in 2014. Even still, while we see the dramatic and unsettling images of these events, for those of us in surrounding and faraway communities that don't get so hit so hard, we don't even breathe a sigh of relief. There's just a silent, unconscious acceptance to coldly get us through this initial moment of discomfort. And as long as you don't have to see people who are hurting, you don't have to act at all. For what it's worth, even if you don't see it, it happens all the time. And we can't turn a blind eye to it just because it's not happening around us. And I will share some mutual aid links that I heavily encourage you all to contribute to for those affected in Detroit. So the images of something out of The Walking Dead may not exactly mirror where we are today. This being said, there is an inherent dystopian character to our world, where more and more events of pain and misery become commonplace. Death and immiseration are seemingly always in the background. But there's either the suggestion or silent acceptance that there's nothing we can really do to fight back. Maybe you can vote every now and then, but there's no guarantee your guy will win. And even if they do, who's going to guarantee they're going to help? Especially when, at the time of recording this episode, a senior director for federal relations on ExxonMobil admits to this. From the New York Times, quote, this employee described how the oil and gas giant targeted a number of influential United States senators in an effort to weaken climate action in President Biden's flagship infrastructure plan. This is not something we should consider normal. It's not that they need to act to stave off crisis. The crisis is already here, and nothing is being done to stave it off. This is the apocalypse. The world we know is not ending. I insist instead that the world we know ended a long time ago. We've just been keeping the facade for a long time. We live more alienated lives. Democracy and civic engagement is eroding. And all that exists at this point, in my opinion, is the cacophonous hooting of the most devoted adherents of the idea that the status quo is worth defending in some capacity. The rest of us are holding out hope for a hero, it seems. But until the day we have said hero there with us, it's still incumbent on us. It's gotta be. And I still only have questions, not answers. But what I can offer is just the suggestion that now is the time to start building solidarity, to stick together, especially as these times continue to get harder. Because the only solution to save us all is going to have to involve all of us. That's all I got for now. Feel free to share your ideas. I'll share our social media links in the description. Until next time, I'll see you at the greenhouse.